Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Jekyll Island and the Rothschild Legacy, The Secret Blueprint, Behind the Federal Reserve, is a short financial history book that examines the origins of the U.S. central banking system through the 1910 Jekyll Island meeting and the broader influence of elite banking families. Written for readers interested in money, power, and the hidden architecture of modern finance, it presents a critical account of how the Federal Reserve was conceived, framed, and later defended. The book focuses on secrecy, institutional design, and the relationship between public authority and private financial control, rather than treating central banking as a neutral technical subject. It argues that the Fed emerged from a coordinated effort among powerful bankers and political insiders to create a system that would stabilize finance while preserving elite influence. Its purpose is both explanatory and polemical to reframe a foundational moment in American economic history as a story about concentrated power, not public reform. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the 1910 Jekyll Island meeting as the hidden origin point of the Federal Reserve. The book centers on the secret 1910 gathering on Jekyll Island as the decisive event behind the creation of the Federal Reserve. It emphasizes the unusual secrecy of the trip, the use of first names only, and the effort to avoid public attention, all of which are presented as evidence that the meeting was politically sensitive and strategically concealed. The narrative treats the conference not as a routine policy discussion, but as the place where the blueprint for the Federal Reserve was drafted before Congress and the public were fully aware of it. By focusing on the setting and the secrecy, the book argues that the central bank's origins cannot be understood simply as a response to economic instability. Instead, the meeting is framed as a moment when a small group of insiders shaped a major national institution outside normal democratic transparency. Secondly, how banking dynasties and Wall Street interests shaped the central banking plan. A major theme is the influence of powerful financial families and institutions, especially the Morgan, Rockefeller, Rothschild, Warburg, and Kuhn-Loeb networks. The book presents these groups as more than background actors. They are described as the real engines behind the plan to reorganize American banking. This emphasis matters because it shifts the Federal Reserve story from public policy to elite coordination. The argument is that the new banking structure would protect the largest financial interests by reducing competition from smaller banks and by concentrating decision-making in a smaller circle of institutions. The book uses this framework to suggest that the Federal Reserve was built to serve the priorities of major bankers who wanted stability, but also wanted control. In that sense, the book links financial reform and self-interest, portraying them as inseparable in the founding of the system. Thirdly, a hybrid institution balancing public authority with private power. The book devotes attention to the Federal Reserve's hybrid structure, presenting it as a combination of public legitimacy and private influence. This is one of its most important analytical claims, because it explains how the system could be defended as a government reform while still reflecting banking interests. The book argues that this design was not accidental. It was intended to make the Federal Reserve acceptable to Congress and the public while preserving meaningful control for the financial elite. That tension between public oversight and private power is central to the book's interpretation of modern central banking. Rather than seeing the Fed as fully governmental or fully private, the book describes it as a deliberately mixed institution whose structure makes its accountability difficult to define. This helps the author explain why the Federal Reserve has remained powerful, resilient, and controversial across different economic eras. Fourthly, financial panics. Lender of last resort logic, and the case for centralized money. The book also addresses the practical justification for creating the Federal Reserve repeated banking panics, fragile reserves, and the need for a lender of last resort. It acknowledges that supporters of central banking viewed a national system as a solution to instability and bank runs. However, the book treats this justification critically, arguing that crisis management became the rationale for expanding centralized authority. In this view, emergencies do not merely reveal weaknesses in the system. They also create opportunities to enlarge institutional power. The book connects the problem of unstable banking to the broader political outcome of giving a central body authority over money supply and credit conditions. This topic is important because it shows the book is not only concerned with secrecy and elite influence, but also with the economic logic used to legitimize the Federal Reserve. It asks readers to consider whether stability was the true goal or whether stability was also the argument used to secure control. Lastly, The Rothschild Legacy as a Framework for Understanding Global Finance. The book uses the Rothschild name as more than a historical reference. It presents the Rothschild legacy as a symbol of how banking families influenced governments, markets, and monetary systems over long periods of time. This theme extends the book beyond the American setting and into a broader interpretation of global finance, where private banking power is portrayed as shaping public outcomes across borders. The Rothschild connection is used to explain why the Federal Reserve story should be read as part of a much larger financial pattern rather than an isolated U.S. event. By doing this, the book links the Jekyll Island meeting to international banking traditions and to the long-standing idea that money systems are designed through concentrated influence. Whether readers accept that interpretation or not, it is central to the book's identity. It frames central banking as part of a historical continuum of elite financial coordination, rather than as a purely national policy innovation. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers who want a critical, compact introduction to the origins of the Federal Reserve, and who are willing to engage with a strongly interpretive view of monetary history. It will appeal especially to people interested in central banking, financial secrecy, elite influence, and alternative readings of economic power. The main benefit is that it connects the Jekyll Island meeting, the structure of the Fed, and the role of major banking families into a single argument that is easy to follow. Even readers who disagree with its conclusions may find it useful as a guide to the anti-Fed critique and the historical claims that have shaped that debate. What makes it stand out from many other books in the same category is its direct, concise, and explicitly skeptical framing. Rather than offering a neutral institutional history, it presents the Federal Reserve as a contested creation shaped by secrecy and concentrated interests. That clear point of view is the book's defining feature, and it is what makes it distinctive within the broader literature on money and central banking. If you would like to support Aurelius Grant, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.